Good morning. It's 9.5 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network. Well, this first hour of our three-hour program today, we are going to take a look at the controversy around the Columbia Trade Agreement. Of course, a lot's been in the news about that, and most of it has been about the opposition to the trade union to the trade agreement by unions, by prominent Democratic politicians, and even some prominent Republican senators who have said they'll oppose the bill. Well, President Bush sent it to Congress anyway, and that will force a vote in a limited time period, something that Democrats in Congress didn't want to have happen in an election year, which could be one reason why the president sent it. And there's been a lot written about and talked about in the news media about the reasons to oppose this deal. But now some people are saying, you know, this is really much ado about nothing. This is the same basic trade pact that we've had in place with Colombia for 17 years or more. And this really doesn't change anything. It just opens Colombia's markets for our exports. Well, we're going to explore that topic today. And to help us do that, my guest is Edward Schumacher Matos, visiting professor at the David Rockefeller Center for Latin American Studies at Harvard University. He's a widely published journalist and former publisher for Mexamerica Media, and he joins me by phone. You can, too. Here are the numbers, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. In Madison, we'd appreciate it if you'd use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can also send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. So please help me welcome now my guest this morning, Edward Schumacher Matos, who joins me by phone. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks for getting up at this early hour and talking with us about this deal. There's been a lot of opposition to, or there's been a lot of talk about opposition to this, the Colombian Free Trade Agreement that President Bush has sent to Congress. Most of it centering around the violence in Colombia, wherein many union organizers over the past few years have been killed. And there's also been controversy over that claim with counterclaims saying that the numbers were overstated and this isn't really a big problem. If I get your position correctly, what you're saying is that that's really all kind of irrelevant, that all this Colombian free trade deal is doing is ratifying something that's been in place for almost two decades.
Well, I actually say two things. One, that yes, it is irrelevant, as you say, and then secondly, that I do think that the violence has come down and that it's exaggerated, but it is a problem. I'm not saying it's not a problem.
But let's talk.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought I'm not as wide awake this morning as I should be. So the violence isn't. There is violence in Colombia, and there's been violence in Colombia for many, many years. It's a place where there are a lot of there are a number of groups in play who don't like each other and who have guns, and so you're going to have that kind of thing. But let's talk about the agreement itself, and what is it? What has been the trade relationship for the last 17 years between the United States and Colombia?
Well, you know, under the presidency of the first Bush administration, and then supported by President Clinton, we passed something called the Andean Trade Initiative. And it was for Colombia and the other Andean countries. And we essentially gave them duty-free access to the American market for almost all their goods, and in particular things like textiles and fruits and vegetables. And under that, Colombia really built up the flour industry. So Colombia now is like the leading, if not the leading, one of the leading flour exporters in the country. And so some of the flours we buy in the United States would come from Colombia and other such things. And so whatever impact that opening the American market would have to Colombian goods under this current trade agreement happened 17 years ago, because all it really does is make that Andean Trade Initiative for Columbia permanent. And it opened up the American market now, I'm sorry, the Colombian market now, to American goods, which still have high tariffs on them.
It's something like 35%, I read someplace. It's a fairly significant tariff.
Yes. I mean, it varies on what it is. Many goods are at 35%. Some are a little less, some are a little more. But 35% is kind of like a good round number on a, sort of an average number on the things.
We're just about at weather time. When we come back, what I'd like to talk about a little bit is how this trade agreement that's been in place has worked for Colombians, and we want to talk about that on the other side of the weather. And we'll hopefully take some calls from our listeners who have questions about this trade agreement and about trade with Colombia. I'll invite people to call 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. In Madison, your number is 263-1890, 263-1890. Here's the email address, talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 17 minutes after 6 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later on today on the Ideas Network. It'll be 2 hours of the Keenan Forum on International Issues with Ben Marin's At Issue at 4 and 5 o'clock today. He'll be hosting the Keenan Forum on International Issues, and this year's topic is Election 2008, Foreign Policy and the Media. That's today from 4 to 6 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, this hour we're talking about the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, and you can talk about it too. What do you think? How have your ideas been formed, and what do you really know about Colombia and its trade situation with the United States? If you have questions about this, we hope you'll call us at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890, or you can send an email with your thoughts to talk@wpr.org. My guest this hour is Edward Schumacher-Matos, visiting professor at the David Rockefeller Center for Latin American Studies at Harvard University. He is a widely published journalist and former publisher for Mexamerica Media, and he joins me by phone. Well, before the news, I kind of teased to the next question, and that is, how has our trade relationship with Colombia worked for Colombians? And the reason I ask that is that it was one of the things that's been said over the years, because Colombia's major export to the United States used to be cocaine, and for all I know, still is. Was that there weren't enough incentives for farmers to grow something else? They could make so much money growing the coca plants. So, how has this trade agreement benefited the Colombians so far?
Well, you know, that was precisely one of the arguments behind the Andean Trade Initiative when it was passed back in 1991, was to open up the American market so that Colombians could go into other businesses than cocaine, or at least other profitable businesses than cocaine, and it has worked. But, you know, with this new trade agreement, you know, Colombia, because it's opening up, will be sacrificing much more than we will. And so a lot of the argument is that Colombian farmers may be hurt by this agreement, by the import of agricultural products from the United States. And that may happen some. That's one of the hard things to measure, particularly in the agricultural sector, because agriculture in all these developing countries has been undergoing the same kind of revolutions that U.S. agriculture underwent in the 19th and through most of the 20th centuries, where the teensy family farm can't survive, and there's a transition as people move from the farms to the city. But you know, in general, overall, what this trade with Colombia has done has weakened the power of the drug mafias. I'm not saying they've gone away, because we have a demand in this country that really drives the drug traffic. But you know, you had a situation, you might remember, Pablo Escobar and the big drug gangs. almost taking over the country. And, you know, that is no longer a threat in Colombia. Their relative power is much smaller today.
So let's talk about the Colombian farmer, though. I mean, because the track record on these free trade agreements, is, if you look at Mexico and many other places, has been that the farmers really take it in their shorts when their markets get opened up to the subsidized commodities that the United States puts out. And primarily that's been corn. But what I've been reading lately is that the price of these commodities has increased so fast that one of the problems in some of these countries has been their local agricultural infrastructure was kind of destroyed by the imports coming from the U.S., and now they don't have enough food to feed their hungry because they don't have the money to buy the goods. And so what I'm wondering is, since the price of commodities like corn and soybeans and so forth has gone up so fast, that perhaps this wouldn't be as big a problem for Colombia as it has been for Mexico and other places whose barriers to U.S. products went down many years ago.
Yeah, no, you're right, John. And so, but that is, you know, the impact of trade on agriculture is a hard one to measure, and it's a hard one to predict. And it's, you know, Mexico, for example, also failed its farmers by never building the sort of infrastructure that it was supposed to build for its farm sector, meaning highways so people get their goods out, or you know, low cost loans so that farmers could become much more competitive. All those sorts of things that they were supposed to do that they never did, for other reasons that have to do with Mexico. Colombia has been more successful in over the years, you know, transitioning out of being so heavily dependent on a farm-based economy. Colombia is mostly an urban country. I mean, it's a country, unlike, say, other countries in South America, that has four major cities, for example. And so now only about, you know, 20-25% of the people are in rural areas in Colombia. So I think the impact will be less. But you're also right about how farm prices now have gone up so much in the world. I suspect your Wisconsin farmers know it. That leaves the local farmers more competitive than everybody thought they would be.
Well, I mean, timing is everything here, because when the North American free trade agreement went through, commodity prices were still fairly low, particularly in the United States, and so we flooded the Mexican market with cheap corn. But now it's a different situation. So that's why I'm saying, you know, maybe it may be a little more advantageous now for those exports to try to compete, because the local farmers may still be able to produce things more cheaply. The you mentioned flour, that you were talking fresh cut flowers, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but for a moment there, I was thinking of the kind you bake bread with. I don't know why.
Fresh-cut flowers, yes. So many of the fresh-cut flowers we buy come from Colombia.
That's to me, that's still amazing. And when you think about it, I mean, it's like when you go to the grocery store now and you can buy fresh fruit that came from Chile, and it looks and tastes like the fruit that we get from the United States, and yet it comes from so much further away. It's just amazing what transportation technology has done. I mean, we really do live in a global economy, and if you want to know, if you want to see the effects of that, go to the grocery store. I mean, my goodness. And now, fresh-cut flowers coming from Colombia. I mean, you know, the idea that that's even possible is still a little mind-boggling.
So, you know, and that kind of leads back to your question about what is this going to do to Colombian farmers. You know, what the trade agreement does, yeah, there are always winners and losers in any kind of a trade agreement. But what the trade agreement has done for some Colombian farmers, those in the flower sector, and even some others in vegetables and particularly fruit, it has made life better. It has raised their income. It has given them markets. It has created lots of new industries. You know, by some studies, there are some several hundred thousand Colombian workers now who are dependent on this trade relationship with the United States that's grown up over the last 17 years. And if we vote down this trade agreement with Colombia, then, you know, by all logic, we should also end the Andean Trade Initiative, which is a temporary thing that's only being extended by several months at a time now. So we would put lots of Colombians out of work. And so imagine what that would do for not just the violence in Colombia, but also for drug trafficking and the like.
Now, this Andean trade pact agreement or initiative, I'm sorry, has been in place. I seem to recall reading somewhere that the trade relationship that currently exists is has been dependent on Congress sort of temporarily authorizing this status from time to time as we've moved forward. Is that correct? Is that how that works now?
Yes, that's totally correct, which is why the Colombians favor this new trade agreement, because there's uncertainty in Colombia about, you know, can we really rely on the markets that we have? Is the United States going to pull the rug out from under us by ending these temporary preferences into the American market? And hence, as you can imagine, people who would want to invest in these businesses that are growing in Colombia are very reluctant. And so the Colombians really want to have a sense of stability for investors and workers, so they can better predict the future and the country can be stronger and grow more.
We'd all like to be able to predict the future.
That's true.
I mentioned timing is everything. The timing of this agreement going to Congress really couldn't have been worse for the Colombians. I mean, we're in the middle of a presidential election where trade agreements have become an issue between the two Democratic candidates. You have union leaders who are talking, tough about what's going on in Colombia. I mean, this is just the perfect storm for this agreement to have walked right into. It's really kind of unfortunate in a way that it came up this way, because this Colombian agreement doesn't seem to be much like the one that that everybody's really seemingly angry about, which is the North American Free Trade Agreement. We're just about at news time, and so we want to, when we come back, we'll talk some more about free trade and timing and politics, and we'll take your calls as well. If you'd like to be involved in our program, here are the phone numbers. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. If you are in Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org, and we invite you to use any one of those to join our discussion this morning. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:35. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. This hour, we're talking about the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, which President Bush sent to Congress last week. And now they have, I think it's 80 days to do something with it, to take an up or down vote. That's stirred up a hornet's nest. Free trade has been a campaign issue this year for the candidates for running for president on the Democratic side anyway, and it came up, it has come up a lot in Pennsylvania, and it came up a lot in Ohio, states which believe they lost jobs to free trade agreements earlier, and so now this free trade agreement has the bad timing of coming up in an election year. Members of Congress have to go back home and run, and places where they've lost jobs, this can be kind of a tough thing. If you supported a free trade agreement and people believe, rightly or wrongly, that their job may have been lost to free trade. So timing is everything. Timing on the phone calls, this would be a good time for you to call in because we have some open lines available. Here are the phone numbers, 800-642-1234, 263-1890 in Madison. The email is talk@wpr.org. My guest this morning is Edward Schumacher Matos, a visiting professor at the David Rockefeller Center for Latin American Studies at Harvard University, a widely published journalist and former publisher for Mexamerica Media. Well, Professor, what about the timing of this thing? I mean, could it be worse? I don't see how it could be.
No, it couldn't be worse right now. The funny thing is that this agreement was actually negotiated and initialed nearly a year and a half ago. In other words, it's been sitting around waiting to go up to Congress that long. Congress has been saying, Bush not to send it yet for lots of reasons we can talk about. But when finally it does go up, which is now, it just couldn't be a worse time because of the primaries. And I think it's real easy to say, and I suspect there's a lot of truth to it, that, you know, Bush was trying to put the Democrats in a bad position because they were campaigning against this agreement and against trade agreements in general, which is unfortunate that they were taking that position. But Nancy Pelosi's now come up with this parliamentary maneuver that nobody saw coming, very shrewd on her part, that essentially freezes the clock as if the agreement had not been sent up, and I think the Democrats would just like to let it sit there until next year after the elections are over.
Well, indeed, that's what's being written in the news media, that this isn't going to come up for a vote before the election because the Democrats simply won't allow it. There's just too much to lose. And it's kind of unfortunate that this has been handled the way it has, because these trade agreements are very serious issues, and it's unfortunate that, this being a political year, both parties are trying to score, and this is an issue that has a lot to offer. We have some callers who would like to join the discussion. Let's start with Dan in Oshkosh this morning. Dan, good morning.
Good morning. Gosh, I wish I had the statistics in front of me, but my understanding is that there's more members of unions, trade unionist activists murdered in Colombia than any other country. And I guess, for any teacher in the state of Wisconsin or any other union member, why would you want to allow your government to import products that have the blood of union members on them? Because that's not a democratic society, and there's been a history of links to Uribe, the president of the country, with the paramilitaries that are murdering trade unionists, environmental activists, all sorts of civil society. So why would, if you're against the murder of civilian, unarmed civilian people, why would you import those products into our country?
That's a very good question, and that is the position that both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are taking. And the truth is very different from what you just said. One, Colombia is a very democratic country. Two, Uribe is not, or has not in any way been proven to be connected to the paramilitaries. Three, under him, he has brought the violence way down. He has disarmed the paramilitaries for the most part. Offered a similar sort of a deal to the guerrillas. That under Uribe, what has happened, and this is not just to defend Uribe, because it started under Pastrana, his predecessor, the Colombian government has reasserted itself in this campaign against this insurgency that's been going on for 40 or 50 years. It really has nothing at all to do with ideology anymore. It has much more to do with the guerrillas being involved in the drug trade themselves. He has essentially won back a lot of the country militarily, and he has helped strengthen the judiciary system, and this United States has been a great benefactor, so that the courts are finally working the way they should be. And so in the particular case of trade union leaders, that if you look at the numbers, and you see numbers as large as 2,500 having been assassinated going back to, going back about 20 years. If you go back and look at those numbers and look at it from the numbers that the unions themselves give you, you discover that 80% of them they say they really don't have any idea who was the perpetrator and what was the motive. In other words, not even the name of the person, to say that it was done by a paramilitary or by a guerrilla. 80%, they don't know themselves. What we have discovered now, because the court systems are finally sort of working, and the Attorney General's office in Colombia, which is actually a part of the court system, in other words, it's not part of the executive branch, it's not controlled by Uribe, it's controlled by the Supreme Court, their Attorney General's office, has been winning all these convictions finally, which is what we've demanded of them, in these union cases. And of the first nearly 100 cases in which they've won convictions, which is almost unheard of in human rights cases in the world, that you win that many convictions, only less than 20%, it turns out, had to do with anything union-related. In other words, that these union guys were being killed not for union activities, but for crimes of passion, for simple robbery, some of them for being members of the guerrilla, some of them for being related to the paramilitaries, because the violence that was taking place surrounding trade unions was a little bit of a political football between the two guerrilla organizations killing each other or killing trade union members, and the paramilitaries being in there killing trade union members. Now, the paramilitaries are the bloodiest of those three groups, but all of them were involved. So, and that's for that remaining 20% that were union-related deaths. The human rights issue is blown way out of proportion. Now, that is not to say that you know, just you can't. I mean, I don't want to stand and justify the murder of even one trade unionist. That's awful. But the last thing is that, you know, that you're not importing the blood of union workers. If it were that way, that would be an awful thing. You're absolutely right. But it is, you know, this is not an agreement with the Uribe government. This is an agreement with the country of Colombia. So the issue is, are you helping Colombians or are you helping Uribe? Uribe is going to go in 2 or 3 or 4 years. I forget how many years is left in his term. Despite the fact that he's extremely popular, I mean, he's running at 80% plus ratings of favoritism in the polls, and has for years, which is unheard of, in his 6 years in office, he's going to go. And so what are we going to do for Colombia to help Colombians develop and be able to continue to lower the violence as they have been doing now over these last 6 years? And this trade agreement contributes to that. So even no matter how you cut the numbers, they're all positive. They're exaggerated, positive in their trends. The total number is way blown out of proportion. And the best thing we can do for Colombia is to help the country grow, overcome its social ills, and continue to reduce the violence. That's a very long answer. I hope it's not too convoluted, and I hope it makes sense.
Well, it did to me, but we'll see what our listeners have to say when we take some more calls on the other side of this weather break. We're going to check and see how wet it's going to be around the state of Wisconsin today, and find out about some other stuff as well. We'll be right back after this little timeout. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, next hour, we're going to take a look at the rhetoric of last night's debate. We'll have a university professor who's an expert on rhetoric and language talk about what the candidates said and how that plays out. And we'll take your calls as well. So that's coming up next hour. We'll talk about the Obama-Clinton debate here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about the Colombian trade agreement, which President Bush sent to Congress last week. It's caused quite a stir. Democrats don't want to deal with this issue in Congress in an election year because because of the mood of the country about free trade in general. Even if this is a really terrific agreement and our guest says that it's a good agreement, that really doesn't matter because perception is reality when it comes to the voters. And so that certainly seems to be playing into this. My guest this hour is Edward Schumacher Matos, visiting professor at the David Rockefeller Center for Latin American Studies at Harvard University. He's a widely published journalist and former publisher for Mexamerica Media. Let's go back to the phones. Excuse me, before I do that, we have some lines available, and if you call right now, you have a shot at getting in before the top of the hour. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number, and if you're in Madison, use 263-1890. Okay, we'll go to Gene in Madison next. Gene, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I must admit, after that last stirring speech of your guest, I almost thought I was listening to the success in Iraq. What I really wanted to talk about, though, was the reason why this symbolic gesture is occurring in an election year. Had this occurred in a non-election year, the congressman would have probably voted for it. Nothing would happen, but this becomes a political football. And I would hope people would consider that what is wrong with our trade policy is that free trade has never existed anywhere. Fair trade, trade in which environmental protections are enforced, where labor protections are enforced, at least by the weak U.S. standards, and all these democracy, open and free elections. I mean, people have seen Frontline and have seen various TV shows. Colombia is one of the pits of the world when it comes to freedom. But I was very moved by the stirring speech, even though I think it was quite specious. Now, why can't we have fair trade? How much do those flower workers that were mentioned earlier in the show get paid? Are they being paid well above the standards of normal workers in Colombia, or are they just working in a non-unionized camp where they just get small amounts of money? All over the world, we need to get fair trade, because the reason why America can't compete with industries is we can't compete with the low cost of imported goods coming in from countries that poison our food, that do all these nice things where everything is cheap, where the workers are working at slave wages, and we call it free trade.
Gene, you raise some common points. Let me say that this agreement is a fair trade agreement. It includes all of the environmental and labor standards that the Democrats had been pushing to include in a trade agreement. It has all that already. It has already been changed to include all that. We forced the Bush administration to make those changes when they were negotiating this agreement several years ago. So the unions in Colombia that oppose this agreement essentially are made up of public sector workers. A number of private sector unions, particularly the ones that are in the export sector, they're much smaller unions. They only represent about 20% of the Colombian workers, but it's also a much smaller sector, support this agreement because they do indeed work for higher wages than most Colombian workers.
Let's take another call, and we'll go to Jerry in Managua. Jerry, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. Professor, you seem to give us conclusions without data. Where is the data to support your claim that the war on drugs, as it has been fought in Colombia, has stopped the trade of cocaine, has reduced it? Where are the numbers that we have helped the Colombian economy? Where are the numbers that we have improved anything in Colombia? These agreements seem to go nowhere but improve the flow of capital and jobs out of the United States. If you had numbers, I would begin to listen to what you say, but you seem to be a free trader without supporting your claims.
I am not an unbridled free trader. I do think that you have to have some fair trade provisions that I hope I made clear in my last answer. In terms of the war on drugs, I'm also not a great supporter of the war on drugs because I think that the primary issue is one of demand in the United States. And I think that we have forced a lot of blood and violence on Colombia precisely through this war on drugs. They're the ones who've taken the great brunt of the sacrifice in this war on drugs, in the sense that they are the ones who have had a lot of very honest prosecutors and honest policemen killed, and just honest people caught in the crossfire. And they're the ones where they have other officials who've been subjected to corruption and that sort of a thing. Now, I don't think that Colombia is a very different case from Mexico about where that corruption lies and that type of a thing. No trade agreement is going to solve the drug problem. I agree with you that the drug flow continues and continues at very high levels. My argument is that the drug mafias no longer have the kind of power in Colombia they used to have because the rest of the economy has grown so much. Colombia has been growing at rates of 7% and 8% a year now for the last decade. Wages have gone up. The Colombian economy has gone up. As legitimate businesses have grown in Colombia, that's my point. And this trade agreement, beginning under the Andean Trade Initiative, has helped all that. Now, it's not the only thing that's done that. This image of Colombia being the pit of the world is just not true. Colombia, as a matter of fact, has, since World War II, had some of the longest running record of steady growth of any country in the world. But not high enough growth to solve all their problems, don't get me wrong. It is a country, it's a third world Latin American country, but it's one that's, that has an average per capita income of about $2,000 a year, and it continues to grow year in and year out. The problem of a country that's just a very third world rural country, which Colombia was 50 years ago, has been slowly evolving, not unlike what we did in our history to become much more of a urban country with urban workers making a higher standard of living. So, there has been steady progress in Colombia, and we have contributed to that. We have also hurt Colombia with this war on drugs and with our own drug demand, frankly.
Let's go next to a call from Steve in Houston, Texas. And, Steve, we're getting close to the end of the program, so I'm going to ask you to be brief.
Yeah, I'll be brief. Two quick comments. One is this issue needs to be revisited. I import 500,000 roses a year from Colombia. This great initiative would have leveled the playing field for American workers. This is pure politics. And if we don't stand behind Colombia and Mr. Chavez's little communist revolution spreads to Colombia and Mr. Rabe, which is waging war against, communist rebels being backed by Venezuela, we're going to have headaches that we can't even imagine. So we need to get this issue revisited for the sake of Latin American peace, because the stakes are very high in this. And, shame on Pelosi and the Democrats, which are held hostage by the union leadership, which is increasingly out of sync with the American workers. That's all I got to say.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Well, there's somebody who agrees with you.
Well, I think those arguments are also very powerful and very valid arguments. Colombia has collaborated with us on this war on drugs. Colombia has been an ally with the United States in many sorts of things. And so, why is it that we're now going to turn our back on Colombia when there's something that they want, and the supreme irony being that in this agreement that they want, they're making bigger sacrifices than they are. So it seems to feed the arguments of Chavez that the United States is an unreliable, a fickle partner, and a partner that only thinks of itself, and has done nothing but exploit Latin America.
Well, we're about out of time, Saul. Thank you very much for this hour, and there were some other issues I wanted to get to, but that's the way it goes in radio. The time is the master of us all. So thank you so much for spending this hour with me this morning. Edward Schumacher Matos is a visiting professor at the David Rockefeller Center for Latin American Studies at Harvard University and a widely published journalist. He joined us by phone. Karen Prager produced this hour of programming with and also handled the on-air production chores. Coming up next hour, we'll talk about the latest Obama-Clinton debate, so stay tuned. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.